The theme for today's service, Gifts of the Dark Wood, was already selected when I agreed to lead it. I have some experience with the internal state of the dark wood, and I believe I heard it calling me back that day, whispering, "There's more for you here if you dare to seek it." You see, although I have experienced some of the gifts of the dark wood, and I'm attracted to that mystery, there are many times when I don't go there. And not all of the action I've taken based on those experiences have been what you would call huge successes. And so I had become a little more skeptical about following my instincts to change my path in life again. When Dante wrote his famous line, "In the middle of the journey of our life, I found myself within a dark wood where the straight way was lost," he intended that the dark wood conjure up an image of a scary internal state that would surely lead Christians to hell. But as Eric Elms explains in his book, Gifts of the Dark Wood, many ancient mystics understood internal struggle not as punishment for sin or as a form of sin itself, but as the central context in which we experience the divine or our true selves, our authentic selves. The dark woods, he writes, are a place where one receives strange and wondrous gifts whose value vastly exceeds whatever hardships are encountered there. In fact, Elnis describes the dark woods as the one place where we are able to find what truly brings us alive in this world. And yet, too few of us are willing to go there, or to go there enough and have the patience to stay. Because the dark wood can be really scary. Whether we're alone in the middle of the night in an actual forest, or hearing those inner words of discontent, the whispers, feeling lost or empty or uncertain about the way forward, or burying those feelings as best we can. Elms goes on to share a lot of wisdom about exploring the dark wood despite our fears and discovering the gifts there. In fact, there are so many good points that he made that I had a really hard time focusing what I was going to say today. But one of his main points was a pretty immediate aha for me in terms of my own experiences with some of the things I've done in the past. Because he explains that making change and moving towards what brings us alive in the world is a slow process of discovery rather than what you might call a leap of faith. In fact, he calls a leap of faith spiritual junk food because they can have disastrous consequences or just not so great consequences. I've been lucky, and partially because of my privilege, I've been able to avoid disaster on my many leaps of faith. But in general, these were not the best moves for my self-confidence, for my trust of my own instincts, much less my finances. But I now have a better idea of how I went astray. I would describe, well, and I'll give you just a short example. I've left jobs many times, and I left Epic after about 8.5 years there. And I had, announced my resignation in advance, But in the meantime, of course, everybody's main question is, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? It seems like see a lot more young folks today leaving there and just spending some time relaxing, regaining their senses, and looking inside. But I felt pretty much like I needed to have what I was going to do, as much for my own sake as for how to answer that question. And I had an aunt who was able to have massage in her home, and it was incredibly helpful for her mobility and her health. And I loved massage, and I believed and still believe that it's good for our health. And I had given a massage to another elder in my family, and I thought, I know, I'll go to massage school, become a massage therapist. And so that was my answer of everybody what I was going to do. I was going to go do massage therapy for elderly people or anybody who needed it in their home, because eventually the therapist who was providing this aunt's massage was not able to do it anymore. And it was hard enough for Aunt Evie to get out that she was not able to go find it, and she didn't find another massage therapist to come to her home. And pretty quickly, her mobility declined more and more. And so I saw what it had done for her, and it was inspiring to me to think of doing that. So I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Well, I was only in massage school a short time. I think it was within the days when I could have gotten the majority of my tuition back, when I really had serious doubts about whether it was truly for me. But I didn't listen. I felt like I started it and I should continue, and I kind of pushed on through. And in the end, it really wasn't for me. There's more to the story, but that's all you really need to know. I spent $10,000 to go to massage school. When I could have spent that 7 months, I mean, look at it now, I could have been relaxing, writing, doing anything, walking in the woods. Not that it was all a bad experience, though, either. I do believe I learned things from it. But now, looking back at those things like that I've done, I would describe them more as trying to take a fast dash through the dark woods. I wasn't exploring and really listening to the dark woods. I was the maybe not so common brave kid who would say, I'll go and then run as fast as I can and try to get to the other side or where I thought the destination was, rather than staying kind of in that place of uncertainty and using more time to discern where I was going. In contrast, Elms describes this discerning process of finding our path as happening slowly over time as we pay attention to what he calls the sweet spots, the moments when we feel connected to our most authentic selves, not just once, but again and again. But this takes patience and experimentation and practice. He describes this repetition as something like a tennis player or another athlete, but a tennis player hitting the ball over and over and over again so that more and more often she finds that sweet spot that feels right, makes it move just right. Our experience, as I've thought about that analogy, because he goes on to talk about how we adjust our path over time and in the moment as we're getting closer and closer to where those sweet spots are for us. These steps are important. He describes finding these sweet spots and moving forward are important because so that we're taking steps, so when we get to a cliff, rather than a leap of faith, it's the natural next step. and we have the experience and the courage to take it, and the wisdom about whether it's a wise step for us. And it makes sense then that he explains how the tools that we most likely try to use to discern where we're going are the tools of rational thought and kind of strategic planning. And I remember reading What Color Is Your Parachute and all of these kinds of things to help us decide where to go. And what he illuminates is that those things don't work well. It's intuition and experience that help us. There are points in the process where planning and strategy are important, but not. But the intuition and paying attention are the most important. So Elms goes on to describe 7 gifts of moving into the dark woods. 2 of them are emptiness and uncertainty. I have to admit that I'm still getting my head around the idea of these as gifts. In fact, when I first read the book, I really saw them more as prerequisites, but not necessarily the gifts of the dark wood, because I tended to think of the destination, a more singular destination, as the prize or the treasure, the gift that we find in the dark wood. But Elms is saying that feelings and openness, like emptiness and uncertainty, are not just conditions. They are the gifts, because there is no final destination, at least not while we're alive. Living with experiences of emptiness and uncertainty are what keep us open to our next step, so that we stay awake and in touch with what brings us most alive. Elms speaks of our calling mostly as being our vocation, though he acknowledges that not everyone has this opportunity, and that our calling can fall outside of the realm of how we make a living. Personally, I think it's vital to see that not everyone, in fact, that most of us, do not have the privilege of making our living doing the things that make us feel most alive. But we can experience what brings us alive in various aspects of our lives, such as our volunteering or activism, or how we relate to our families and other beings, or participating in our faith communities. Elms is a Christian minister, which he acknowledges, and so he tends to approach his materials from a progressive Christian tradition. He is careful to acknowledge that and to show that people of all faiths or no faith at all may experience the gifts of the dark wood. But what strikes me is how much his ideas correspond with Buddhist teachings, and how meditation and mindfulness can assist us in allowing ourselves to have these experiences that lead us on the path to our authentic selves. For those of us who have busy lives, it can be hard to take time to experience stillness. And for those of us who are human, it can be easy to avoid the quiet. Our culture encourages us to be in a constant state of either motion or outward attention, to go to movies or watch television or search the internet or look at Facebook, to be constantly receiving information rather than looking within to our own experiences and feelings. And I, as a human being, tend to resist sitting down simply to breathe, to spend moments where I let my thoughts drift by and return again and again to my breathing and my experience of being in the moment. Perhaps for most of us, avoidance comes more naturally than openness. But solstice is a natural time to pause and let ourselves experience emptiness and uncertainty in the darkness, so that we are open to new possibilities as the light returns to our days. Our Unitarian Universalist faith encourages each of us to value our own experiences and to encourage each other in spiritual growth and/or our individual and collective search for meaning and conscience. We are called to wake up, to be true to our souls or our authentic selves. How do we discern the difference between the call of our souls or authentic selves from self-destructive thoughts or non-helpful messages that our minds can send us? Ellen's tells us, again, that we can do so through cautiously following the sweet spot moments when we feel connected over time. And that means that we cannot look to our minds or logic for definitive answers, and that we cannot think our way to the sweet spots in our lives. We must experience them. So let's go there, into the dark wood, the places that call us, the places that delight us, and especially the places that scare us. Most of these places we can't go together, or at least not the whole journey, because part of it must be uniquely one's own. But we are each called to awaken ourselves and to encourage and support each other. We don't need to rush, and in fact, we shouldn't. Go carefully and slowly, listening to yourself and valuing your own experience as you grow and slowly find your way. Don't be scared away by the fear of not meeting others' expectations or being criticized or even for failing. Ellen's teaches that we should value our failures at least as much as our successes, but that's another sermon. Ellen's reassures us, you have a place in this world. It is a place where awkwardness dissolves and you are most fully alive and therefore most fully human. The Sufi mystic Rumi says, today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep.